Good afternoon, everybody. The light's going out. I guess that's my hint to start. So, who has been to my previous session yesterday? Okay. There are some slides you will find familiar. But I've basically, this morning, I've restyled all the slides. So, that was my morning. Always fun. So, for the people that don't know me, see if it works. Yes. My name is Jeff Wouters. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm a Windows PowerShell MVP, currently working at eVision Software. My title is, and I have to look because I took it from a contract, Lead Infrastructure DevOps Engineer. So basically, my job is to implement DevOps. And DevOps isn't a product, but a whole way of integrating the processes and the workflows of the business with IT. If you want to find me, take a look on various social media or on my blog. If you want to find me during the week, most of the time I'm in sessions or in the speaker room, and on stage or in the parties, I'm also present. So this session is about DSC resource authoring. So what is a DSC resource? Anybody that can answer it? Just take a guess. What's a DSC resource? Okay. Well, it's not an installed program. It hasn't got an MSI or an executable, so no installed program. It is and it isn't a PowerShell module. A DSC resource isn't a PowerShell module. It's basically a text file. But when you combine multiple resources as a group, let's say, for example, you've got DSC resources to configure your SCOM client, then you combine them into a module, and you can handle it like a PowerShell module. You can make a manifest. You can create a help file for it. And it has a PowerShell-y look and feel. So this is the beauty. Linux, or Unix, is a text-based, text file-based, oriented operating system. Windows is an objects and API-oriented system. But PowerShell Design State Configuration works with text files. All the resources are just plain text. You can file copy to a target, and the target can use them. There's no reboot required, no process you have to kill or whatever. It's like how Linux has been doing it for 25 years. So like I said, you can deploy them through a file copy. There is a DSC resource for files. So what you can say is I've got a file share over here with all my DSC resources for in the company, and all my targets, my clients, need to verify that those resources are available on the local system, so the system can use it. In my first try, I did that at the first step of each configuration, verify all my resources are available. Then I was introduced into OneGet. Who doesn't know OneGet? Okay. OneGet is the PowerShell wrapper around a NuGet repository. So it's a repository for packages. And this can be a repository online, internal, whatever you float your boat. So for PowerShell, currently only a NuGet repository is supported with chocolatey packages. Chocolatey is a certain package provider. That's the current only supported solution. I haven't seen anybody getting it to work without Chocolatey. So, what this does? How do you deploy a package? Anybody? I know there are some System Center people here, so you have to know. Config Manager. Okay, fine. So Config Manager works with a repository or? Yeah, packages. But those packages are stored somewhere. What do you call it? It's a repository. So any location where you can combine multiple resources, you can define as a repository. So with the NuGet repository, you can use HTTPS or HTTP if you want to do it unsecure to deploy them. You can define certificates. Any way you can secure an HTTPS connection, you can use to make this more secure. What we have done thus far is create an internal NuGet repository. Only the we are a software developer, so only our own packages are located in the internal repository, and we're using the Chocolaty repository on their website to install 7-zip or WinRAR or whatever small tools that are available over there. So why should we host it when they're already doing it? All you need is an internet connection, and something very important, you have to trust them not to say that it's WinZip and it's something totally different. Let's say a hacking tool or something.
Are there certificates in place for that?
Yes and no. For the Chocolaty one, you simply have to define this is a trusted repository. So no certificates are used. With the internal one, what you can do is say, yes, this is a trusted one, but still for the HTTPS connection, it requires a certificate. But you have to configure that on both sides. By the way, for your information, this is where Microsoft with PowerShell and configuration management are going. Combine DSC with OneGet for deployment. Deployment of packages, not the operating system yet. So resource naming. With PowerShell, with a commandlet or function, you have a certain naming standard, verb-noun. With the DSC resource, this is not the case. It's one word together. If you prefer, you can start each word with a capital, just to make it more readable. A little sidestep to DSC configurations. If you create a DSC configuration and the name will be verb-noun, even in PowerShell ISE, it will make a red line under it saying, well, I'm sorry, but a dash is not allowed. So it has to start with a letter, not a number. It can include numbers, but not as the first character. And a dash is not allowed. So that's a little bit different from functions. No prefix with DSC resource means it's native on the system. So that's basically only for Microsoft, in my opinion. All others are either an X, that's from a vendor. So best effort support, and in some cases, if there's any support at all. So with one vendor, I know that one of their engineers had a Saturday of nothing to do. You created a few resources, thrown them online under the company account. And the company was saying, yeah, well, we're not supporting that. So, oops. The C is for community support, community resources. So, Stephen Morosky, another PowerShell MVP, has been creating a lot of DSC content. I'm naming a few of them in this session that will make your DSC authoring easier. Creating an MOF file, he's got a script for that. You don't need to do it manually. So when we take a look inside the resource, a DSC resource consists out of three functions, always. These three are required. If you're forgetting one, the system will give you the finger back and it won't work. So get target resource, test target resource, and set target resource. Let's start at the bottom. Set target resource. Configure the resource on the target. Pretty straightforward. Test target resource. I used to say that with functions and commandlets, if the verb is test, it has to return a true or a false. There are some commandlets that don't follow that, but okay. That was my personal opinion. This one doesn't do that. So it validates everything set target resource can configure. Remember that, I'm getting back to that later. Everything is key there. So get target resource. If you're already testing and you're already setting, then it's pretty easy to overlook get because, hey, I've tested it already. And if testing says false, it's not there. Not entirely. It's not configured like I want it to be configured. So get target resource returns the current configuration. The current configuration of the target, not the current configuration I want it to be. This is one slide that may be familiar from yesterday, but I've changed it a little. This is a basic design of a DSC resource. Location has to be C program files, Windows PowerShell modules. Please don't put it in System32. Under that is, I've named it My DSC Resources. And that's the DSC Resource module. So what you can do is HR DSC Resources, SQL DSC Resources, or SQL Team 1 DSC Resources. Just in case you've got multiple teams doing a little bit of the same, but also different, and you can identify which team is the owner of a certain group of resources. So this is where you have to trick PowerShell a little. You're grouping DSC resources together in a module. So you want PowerShell to handle it like a module, import it like a module. That's why mydscresources.psm1 is an empty file. There's nothing in there. Of that empty file, you create a module manifest, mydscresources.psd1. So that's a normal PowerShell module manifest, but all the values are either asterisks, do everything, or do nothing. There's nothing specific to do here. One thing, it has a versioning. And that can be very useful when you're deploying new versions. Under My DSC Resources, there's another folder, DSC Resources. This is a constant value. This has to be named DSC Resources. Do you choose something else, it won't work. And here we get the actual DSC resource with the actual code and the DSC resource manifest. As you may have noticed, those three have the exact same name. That's how PowerShell identifies, well, this file collaborates with this file under this folder. Same thing here. That's something to keep in mind. But if you're choosing to use different names, then maybe it can cause some problems. When I was first playing with this, I named all six the same name. It works. Not a problem. So you can do that. It's not really a best practice. Naming two different things the same thing, it gets confusing, especially when you're documenting stuff. So, composite resources. These are all about the bigger picture, bigger implementations. So, when you have multiple resources, or how I use, how I use it. I've got a certain configuration for all my web servers. A few ports need to be open, a folder needs to be there, etc., etc. So I created a composite resource for this to define web server type 1 and web server type 1, 2, 5. So what I can do in a configuration is say, well, I've got a configuration for web server company intranet. And instead of defining all those settings in those composite resource again, all I need to do is say, this composite resource has to be applied to this target. Done. That's one line of code. So all the code in the composite resource, you're reusing in one line. I'm lazy. I like it. So use them for generic configurations. When you standardize, things become generic. And you can script that. So you can use them with or without parameters. There's a guy called Robert Westerlund. I guess he's German. Does anybody know Robert? Too bad. I'm still looking for him. He has written a great post about how you can add parameters and use them to composite resources. It's really not that difficult. But nobody has documented it before, so he was the first. So why would you use those? Normally, yep. Let's say you've got three DSC resources, one to configure an IP address, one to configure the gateway, and one to configure the DNS. Then you create a composite resource called configure NIC. For example, this one you give parameters, and like I said before, test target resource tests all things set target resource can configure. So let's say that IP address, gateway, and DNS were to be configured in one DSC resource. IP address stays the same, but somebody logs in, removes or replaces the gateway, logs off again. This DSC resource is put against the target, and it's saying, well, IP address, yes. Gateway, wait a sec. IP address, yes. I don't need to go any further. So with one test, it's saying everything is all right, and the gateway is still faulty. That's why DSC resources are a little bit the same mindset as commandlets. They do one thing and one thing very good. If you want more, no problem, pipe it to the next command, or in this case, write a different resource. Yeah, you can read it. There's a little gotcha I found, two actually. PSDSC allow plain text password. Desired state configuration is designed in a way where it works in the as the local system, so not in the user context. I've seen multiple people asking on Twitter, well, I've got something I want to do in the user context. No, that's not why desired state configuration is created currently. I don't know if there's more in the planning to work towards a user context, but it's all about deploying systems, not deploying or configuring users. So let's say you want, for whatever reason, to do something with a resource that is not behaving the way DSC is designed. Let's say, for example, a password is required or different credentials on the target. So not system. System has no rights to accomplish it. Then you can pass different credentials. One thing, like the property says, allow plain text password. Goodbye, security. So that's something to keep in mind. And well, this is how you can use it. Both ways are possible. The top one has my preference because passwords and usernames hard-coded in scripts, not my preference. The disadvantage of this is that the person executing, so this is a push mechanism, the person executing the configuration will have to know the username and password. And here's the second gotcha, reboots. The local configuration manager, by default, doesn't allow for a reboot. So you have to configure that. Next up is in test target resource, in the desired state configuration resource you've created, you need to configure the global flag. It's called the DSC machine status. You have to set to 1. DSC will monitor this flag, and the moment it sees it, hey, the flag has changed, it knows, hey, I need to reboot, I'm rebooting. If the local configuration manager says it's allowed to. So those two work in collaboration. The links are in blue, but the slides will be downloadable, I guess, I hope. If not, they will be on my blog. The DSC Resource Designer is something written by Microsoft, which helps you create a DSC resource. And believe me, download it, use it, it will save you a lot of headache. And to my knowledge, all the bugs are fixed from it. So, ooh. New MOF file. There are a few versions of this. The latest version also supports different enums. So, the previous one only supported, I believe, 1 or 2 enums. And right now it's basically whatever you put in it, it accepts. So a MOF file has to start with class version and a friendly name. Especially the friendly name. You probably don't want to type the entire path and the module name and etc. out. So configuring a friendly name, people like that. It's rather usable. Import DSC resource has 2 parameters you can use to import resources. Name, so the name of the DSC resource, or module name. Module name is faster, way faster. Name will make the system go through all this DSC resource modules available on the system, and one by one it will go through them. Do you have this DSC resource? That takes a long time, especially when you've got like 60, and that's only what's currently available. There will be more in the future. So when you configure the module name, it will load all the DSC resources in the module. Yes, it's more than you need, maybe, but it's a heck of a lot faster. And we're talking about plain text files that are loaded into memory, so how many kilobytes is that? So, who has never used PowerShell Help? Good answer. Who has tried using, who has successfully gotten the help from a DSC resource? Nobody. Has anybody tried it? Okay, that explains it. With PowerShell, normally you do get help and the name of the functional commandlet. With DSC resources, this is not the case. There's a workaround for it. You can create an about help. So about underscore DSC resources underscore name of the DSC resource. You can do that with the file name that ends with help.txt. This is a UTF-8 encoding. Like I said, the naming. And that's the example. Well, this is the nuclear deterrent. DSC caches modules. So whenever a module is loaded, it's cached. And after a certain time, it is removed from the cache. But that also means that sometimes you can, for example, configure that a module is not allowed to update itself when new versions are available. If somebody has done that, new versions, implementing new versions can be troublesome. Also with push systems. With push, you've got the force parameter, and even with the force parameter, there are ways to make it so that force doesn't work. So fixing cached modules, you can delete, you need to perform all these four actions, and by then the system is basically wiped from DSC. You have to reconfigure it, that's the last step, reconfigure the local configuration manager, and then you can push the new configurations. This is only when all other options have failed. A few useful links. Reusing existing configuration scripts, or in other words, composite resources. That's an article from, I believe, Microsoft. The PowerShell product team has written that. Creating a composite DSC configuration with parameters is from Robert Westlund. The DSC book, or the DSC ebook. That's a free ebook written by Don Jones and Stephen Morosky. It's a work in progress, but as DSC grows, the book will grow. This is one I found this morning. Want to secure credentials in DSC. Like I said, plain text credentials, or even asking a user for credentials. Not my preference. So there's an article, and that takes quite some work to implement, but it is possible to use secure credentials with DSC. And a link to writing the help. Are there any questions thus far? Okay. What is the time? Oh, I'm going fast. Okay, let's take a small look. Didn't I boot it? Nope. While the system boots, is anybody using DSC? Nobody. How are you configuring your systems? Config Manager, AD. Anybody using Altiris? I'm at the good conference, okay. Chef, Puppet. We're there. Well, In that case, you'll see that the chef, puppet, and chocolatey, and a fourth one, they are embracing PowerShell DSC to accomplish their tasks. And that's in the very near future. I believe Chef has already come out with a version that supports it. Who knows the PowerShell deployment toolkit? Or the hydration kit? I know that the authors of those systems are either currently in rewriting the product to use DSC, or they're very seriously looking at it, and that basically means that they're also going to do it. Yeah, you're not seeing anything. There we go. Wrong password, of course. Don't actually need my server. Let's say that I've got a composite resource to configure my web server. In that case, what I can do is configure. Wake up. I can write a configuration for, let's say, example. Can everybody read this? Okay. My website one. In this, I can configure. There are these resources. For example, import DSC resource, get DSC resource. Let's take a look at the system. This will take a minute, so I'm continuing. I can import the DSC resource module, so the DSC resources that are in that module are available to me. There we go, X website. Unable module not found. Am I that crazy? Yeah. I can import those resources. What you can do next is. Note. I'm making a parameter for the node name. No, I am saying for node, that one. There we go. I'm doing whatever I want. But first, I'm import DSC resource. My DSC resources. So that's I've got a configuration for the web server type, web server type 1. The moment I do this, let's say that in this this will properly see community. This is the module name I've for my composite resource. In this composite resource, I'm making a mistake. No. Sorry. I'm calling my composite resource directly. And if there are no parameters, it will automatically, if I do it here, it will automatically configure this node according to this composite resource. So that's all the code for the web server install configuring. I don't need to retype again. So by defining your type of servers, that's step one. Step two would, for example, be defining development, acceptation, test, production. Maybe you want certain ports to be open on development, test, and acceptation, but definitely not on production. You can also create composite resources for that. So this is very granular. Start very low level, like this resource to configure one thing and expand on that. Next, you group them. After you've grouped them, you've got multiple groups, multiple DSC modules, then you can start looking at composite resources. And if you take this approach, in the beginning, you will go for maybe for a manager's perspective very slowly. But that also means that you can show the manager on each week. Well, last week we did this. This week I've created these resources, and now I can configure this. The week after that, you've got a composite resource. And okay, I've got 2 weeks of work. Right now I can deploy an entire web server with this specific website with one DHC configuration file. And after that, you can configure the target to keep looking at this DSC configuration file, and the target will remain consistent. And who hates consistency? I was so hoping for no fingers. Okay, let's go back to the slides. So session feedback, if you want to provide me any feedback at all, positive, negative, tips, if you want to burn me, go ahead. Design state configuration is a tool, like PowerShell, it's just a tool. What we can accomplish with this is automation, configuration enforcement, and it used to be called configuration compliancy. But who works in the financial industry? What is compliancy with you?
PCI DSS,
for example, yeah. So in America, when the financial guys were looking at DSC, and yeah, but compliancy with us means something totally different. So we're reading compliancy, and we're expecting what we know of compliancy. And then they were a little bit disappointed. So they're changing the name, and it will probably be something like enforcement. Who is doing DevOps? Who wants to do DevOps? Three fingers. Okay, nobody else? You're scared of DevOps. Come on. So a slide from my presentation yesterday I can use for this. I'll go quickly to it. Yeah. So DevOps, standardization, that's step one. You have to standardize. And standardization also means that you've got less amount of driver packs in your configuration management, for example. If you're truly embracing bring your own, then maybe you would even have to support all those different drivers. Who has more than 25 driver packages in their configuration manager environment? Yeah. Who thinks that's fun? No fingers, okay. So, standardization, step one. When you standardize, you can automate. When you can automate, it leads to continuous delivery. And continuous delivery to continuous deployment. There's a big difference between those two. Basically, business processes. Continuous delivery means that you're going from a development to test to acceptation automatically. It's approved over in development, so automatically it's deployed to test. If a test has been approved, etc., etc., but not to production. That's still a manual task. So if you're really trusting your users and your testers, etc., to do their work, you can do a continuous deployment. In other words, the business process is responsible for releasing a new release, not the IT admin anymore. Because who has ever deployed something or in a project? Yes, it has been tested, no problem. You deploy it and everything fails. Nobody? Because I know for a fact there are two over there that have done that. So, with continuous delivery and even continuous deployment, you're giving the problem ownership back to the testers, to the users, to the business, not to the IT admin anymore. Naturally, the IT admin has to fix it afterwards, but that has always been the case. But with continuous delivery and deployment, what you can do is, hey, production has been messed up. Not a problem. We don't need snapshots or backups or whatever. We can simply redeploy the entire production environment again. And that's true DevOps. There are only a few companies in the world that are doing that. Continuous delivery is more and more. Continuous deployment. There are only a few companies I know that are doing that. Yeah, Google. And the Facebook. And the company with all the Instagram, that one, pictures. My employer and I are currently working towards this, but this is a year plan. And not 1 year, but multiple years. So, everybody with me thus far? DevOps understood? So let's go a step further. This is all about integrating business processes in IT. Why not the other way around? So who has ever worked with a manager or a project manager, project leader that has no technical know-how whatsoever? That's it? Come on. Okay, quite a few. So, what I would say is DevOps means that the ops guys, they don't need to know how to program, but they need to know how Scrum works, how Agile works, just the basic concepts. I think the same goes for project leaders. They don't need to know how Config Manager works, but they do have to know what configuration management is. And that's my personal opinion, and I'm fighting to get that done, but some people don't want to cooperate. So who doesn't agree with that philosophy? So I can expect all of you to go to your managers and start teaching them technical stuff? Okay. So it's all about business workflows and processes. And I said that yesterday also, they are there for a reason for you to abuse. So think about that. How many times has the business come to you and, yeah, but the business, if you don't do it right now, the business will fail. Nobody? You've got good customers. Whoa. So a risk with this is that if it has to be done right now, you're doing a quick fix. Putting out fires, stuff like that. Not a constructive deployment. So when you understand these business processes and business needs, you can anticipate them. Or even better, when the business starts buying critical applications for the business, the application has been bought, a license of 2 million euros. And then they go to IT, hey, we've bought an application, can you implement it? It doesn't have security whatsoever. Everything is plain text. It uses a MySQL database. We can't do anything with it. And then IT is the bad guy. So that's for me is also part of DevOps. IT gets integrated into the buying of hardware and software earlier in the process. We actually should have a deciding vote or part of it. Or not entirely, we're not deciding, but advising, but with a, how do you call it? It should have a high value, the advice. Only when you give arguments. If you say, yeah, I don't want that. Why? Because I don't want that. Yeah, that's not the right approach. So. This was my session. I'm also, again, a little bit early. But I hope you enjoyed it.